Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. President Trump says America first, and he says it to everyone, including America's oldest and closest allies. And he says it in pretty rough language. It's a huge change. Allies are watching, listening, beginning to respond. This hour, On Point in our 100-day spotlight, America and its longtime allies in the time of Donald Trump. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Will America first mean America alone? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Lots of blow-ups here, lots of swipes at allies and beyond. At the National Prayer Breakfast on Thursday, President Trump said not to worry about reports of his rough interactions with other leaders.
When you hear about the tough phone calls I'm having, don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. They're tough. We have to be tough. It's time we're going to be a little tough, folks. We're taken advantage of by every nation in the world virtually. It's not going to happen anymore. It's not going to happen anymore.
Don't worry about it, said the president. Here was Vice President Mike Pence telling ABC's This Week host George Stephanopoulos that there's a new kind of leadership going on here.
President Trump is bringing a very candid and direct type of leadership to the White House. And in conversations with leaders around the world, frankly, I think they all find it very refreshing.
Some of them find it unsettling.
Well, and to the extent that we have a president who's got broad shoulders and is willing to put the interests of the American people first and speak directly to leaders about the world, about America's interests, that may be unsettling to some.
Maybe unsettling. Some say it's just plain wrong. Here's Democratic Representative Adam Schiff on the Foreign Affairs Committee on MSNBC Thursday saying the president needs to stop acting like the U.S. is a victim.
His view of the world apparently is that everybody's cheating us. Everybody's out to get us. We're the poor victim. No, we are a great beneficiary, frankly, of these tremendous alliances we have with countries like Australia, our NATO alliance. Those are to our benefit, and he needs to start understanding that.
We're going to get a spectrum of views in this hour on how President Trump is interacting with American allies, including the very closest and oldest American allies. Joining us first today from London via Skype is Stephen Erlanger, London bureau chief for The New York Times. He's been watching President Trump's interactions with U.S. allies in Europe. Steve Erlanger, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Tom. Hi.
So the vice president says that foreign leaders are finding this very refreshing. Do you see that?
Well, cold showers can be very refreshing, too. It doesn't always, it's not always what you expect or what you deserve. They're finding, depending on who they are, but Trump is shaking assumptions made about American foreign policy since World War II, and people find that very disconcerting. I mean, he has said, on the one hand, NATO's obsolete, and then later says he thinks it's great. And then he talks about it as if it were some dues-paying club, like, you know, American interests only were a matter of somebody paying a bill. And there's this notion that America, since the war, has been not only supportive of European integration and European self-help, but of the European Union, which is this great exercise, sometimes not a successful exercise, but generally has been a very successful exercise in shared sovereignty. And he thinks it's obsolete too, and he praises Brexit and thinks other countries will leave it. He's attacked Germany, which is one of America's most important allies in Europe and certainly the most important country in the European Union and in Europe itself. And he's doing so at a time when the European Union has all kinds of other challenges that have nothing to do with Trump, like Ukraine and more aggressive Russia and security issues and border issues and low economic growth and joblessness and a far right movement that Trump seems to be endorsing and egging on rather than seeing as a danger. So for all these reasons, people are shaken, and they're not yet convinced his views aren't being amplified by people like Flynn and Bannon in the White House. They're obviously very hopeful that more traditional thinkers, you can consider them old-fashioned thinkers, but like James Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, who is a very strong believer in NATO and has very skeptical views about Vladimir Putin and Russia, will have an impact on Mr. Trump. But so far, it's not clear.
Let's just stick with Europe. I mean, we could talk about Japan and Australia and beyond, but sticking with Europe.
And Mexico.
And Mexico right next door. But sticking with Europe for a moment, you've written that President Trump, Steve, is the first American president in 70 years who doesn't seem to want to move forward on European integration. How is that being interpreted by European leaders?
Well, it's partly being interpreted as something eccentric, but it is also being seen as a danger, as a challenge added to these others, because if the United States is not an active supporter, and of course the U.S. nuclear umbrella covers Europe too, but if suddenly the United States isn't really the leader of this set of shared values of Western liberalism and cooperation and trade agreements among like-minded nations, then it becomes yet another problem for everyone else to deal with. And to deal with Russia and China without the confidence that you normally have in American support makes people nervous. I mean, if Trump sees every alliance as not an alliance, not a commitment, but a transaction, in other words, you do this and I'll do this and we'll agree on what we should both do together, but only that, that means it's temporary. And that means people lose confidence and they start hedging their bets.
Steve Erlanger, please stand by in London. We're really glad to have you with us this hour. I want to get a quick German view here, if I may. Swing to Berlin briefly. Jan Tschau is with us. He's director at the Richard Holbrook, C. Holbrook Forum for the Study of Diplomacy and Governance at the American Academy in Berlin. Jan Tschau, thanks very much for being with us from Berlin.
Tom, thanks for having me.
All right, take it from a German perspective. Donald Trump has been rather casual, to say the least, with old and long-time alliances. How is that being received in Berlin?
Well, for the Germans, this is particularly worrisome because for the Germans, in their entire kind of post-World War II persona, the one thing that they needed to be firm and steadfast is their what they call Westbindung, their, you know, kind of their firm embeddedness into the family of Western nations and Western culture and Western politics. And, you know, when the main pillar of the West doesn't look so Western any longer, for the Germans, that's more than just a political crisis. That can potentially be an existential crisis. And this is why you also hear so many very shrill voices from over here, including this week's cover of Der Spiegel news magazine. Even people who are not really political people sense that something potentially existential is at stake here. And so, you know, everybody's watching this very, very closely.
If you haven't seen it, the cover of that Der Spiegel magazine, very shocking. It shows a sort of cartoon version, but very bold, blunt, Donald Trump with the severed head of the Statue of Liberty and a bloody knife in his other hand, sort of redolent of terrible photos of ISIS beheadings. When you say that the leaders there don't worry, that they do worry that the United States doesn't look so Western anymore, what do you mean, Jan Tschau?
Well, the key point here is that, of course, the stability of the European political market, if you want to put it that way, depends on the American Security Guarantee and on an direct and indirect investment of the United States into European integration, as Steve has just explained. If that, you know, investment goes away, Europe goes back to its, you know, normal state of affairs, which is one of being unstable structurally. The Europeans don't have a great record of stabilizing their own continent. They have relied to a large degree on the United States, sometimes frivolously so, on the United States investment in Europe to stabilize it for them. Once you take that capital out that the U.S. has brought into this market, you create an unstable kind of environment again. And that's what I mean by existential. And that's what I mean by not so Western anymore. You know, this kind of underwriting of a rules-based, integrated, you know, open society that Europe wants to be and has to be if it wants to live at peace. And the U.S. plays just such a tremendously important role in it. You take that role out, everything becomes uncertain again.
Jan, we just have a couple of minutes. Do you see legitimacy in Donald Trump's complaint or his assertion that the U.S. has been taken advantage of? Is this a circumstance that can be fixed with a few more dollars or euros being thrown at it by European allies? Or is there a fundamental problem or crack in the great American alliance system here emerging?
Well, I think it works both ways. Of course, Europeans have taken that for granted for too long. Whether they have taken openly advantage of it, you know, that's another question. I don't think that anybody was out there, you know, just to basically, you know, gobble up the U.S. subsidy and then walk away and basically, you know, thinking that this is some kind of fun game where you can take advantage of somebody. This is a really deadly serious kind of game. And the Europeans for a long, long time have been way too passive and have not invested enough in their own security. And to that extent, of course, Donald Trump's criticism is justified, only that he didn't invent it. This is the criticism that Europeans have heard from previous administrations, you know, decades back. And so in that sense, that's correct. The one thing that is the fundamental question that worries people here is that that Trump doesn't seem to understand the importance of the European market also for American security, how Europe is a force multiplier, a power multiplier for America in this part of the world, how strategically important it is for the Americans to keep that continent stable. So it wasn't just about, you know, giving something for free to the Europeans. It was also about something that actually paid loads and loads back to the Americans. But that's the part of the equation that Donald Trump doesn't seem to understand fully.
Jan, just 20 seconds here. If Trump stays on this track, are these alliances at risk? If you have another president who goes another way in 4 or 8 years, are the allies still there to resume closer ties with?
Well, it all depends whether he touches the core of the matter, which is Article 5 in NATO. Is the U.S. security guarantee for its NATO partners, can it stand? Is it still there in 4 years or not? That's the structural issue that's at stake. And if that still is in place and if he keeps that alive somehow, then the damage can be limited. If he touches this, we have a real fundamental problem.
Jan Teschau at the Richard C. Holbrooke Forum for the Study of Diplomacy and Governance at the American Academy in Berlin. Thank you for joining us, Jan.
Thanks a lot.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American allies and their deep unease in the time of Donald Trump's America First view of the world. Stephen Erlanger is with us, London Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Julie Smith and James Carafano join us in just a moment. You can join us as well. How do you think America looks to the world, to allies right now? How do you think it looks to the oldest and closest of allies? Should we care? And when Donald Trump says America First, does that, could that mean America alone? When the president says, don't worry about it, when we hear about rough conversations with old allies, are you reassured? Still worried about it? Glad that he's, what, talking tough? That was Friday, don't worry about it, from the president at the prayer breakfast. Over the weekend, sort of pre-Super Bowl interview with Fox News host Bill O'Reilly, the president said he respects Russian President Vladimir Putin. Even though O'Reilly said Putin's a killer, Trump turned that right around.
Do you respect Putin?
I do respect him.
Do you? Why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with him. He's a leader of his country. I say it's better to get along with Russia than not. And if Russia helps us in the fight against ISIS, which is a major fight, and Islamic terrorism all over the world,
right?
Major fight, that's a good thing. Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
It's very possible. He's a killer, though. I won't. Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent? Do you think our country's so innocent?
The president of the United States there putting out a kind of moral equivalency between Russia and the United States. That has got a lot of people's attention. And, of course, it comes back to who and what is the U.S. going to support. News conference last week in Estonia, European Council President Donald Tusk said he's worried about U.S. President Donald Trump's foreign policy.
In an increasingly multipolar external world, so many are becoming openly anti-European or Eurosceptic at best. Particularly the change in Washington puts the European Union in a difficult situation, with the new administration seeming to put into question the last 70 years of American foreign policy.
Steve Erlanger in London, Julie Smith and James Carafano join us in just a moment. But what's the logical extension of what we've seen so far from the Trump administration with allies, European allies in particular? Where does it go? And particularly in light, Steve, of this continual expressions of admiration for Vladimir Putin and Russia.
Well, there are two things here. I mean, one is no one really understands his fascination with Vladimir Putin. I mean, he seems to be very interested in people he regards as strong leaders the way he regards himself, like Erdogan in Turkey and Putin and even Xi Jinping. None of them are great Democrats, it should be said.
None.
He does seem to feel that he can do a deal with Moscow. Now, we know Putin wants certain things. He wants respect. He wants to be treated as an equal. He wants to be treated as a great power. He also wants to restore his influence over the areas of the former Soviet Union, which he regards as having ripped away from Moscow in a great geopolitical tragedy of the last century when Russia was weak. Now, why an American president thinks that's a good idea troubles many Europeans. And at first, when he started talking, Trump started talking about trading off sanctions against Russia on Crimea and its activities in eastern Ukraine for a deal on nuclear weapons. He was pulled back from that by Europeans, including Angela Merkel, but also by Mattis, who made it clear that those sanctions were about the annexation of Crimea and not about nuclear weapons at all. And they seemed to keep supporting them. There is one interesting thing to me, which is that we seem to be saying to Russia for the first time, probably since the Russian Revolution, we are not trying to change you. We don't care what kind of government you have. We don't care if you're like us. We don't care actually what you do to your people at home, but what are your real interests and what are ours, and let's make a deal. Now, that might work depending on the negotiation. It could even be refreshing. And it may give Putin a sense of more confidence. But the second problem is that Trump seems to be supporting the very people that Putin seems to be supporting, i.e. far-right parties in Western countries like France, Germany, and Britain, which was what Brexit was about, which really troubles the leaders of those countries who are supposed to be our allies.
Do you see a potential end to the American alliance system in Europe, Steve?
Well, no, not that, because there are, you know, people in the administration who think that would be a really tragic idea. But what I see is a weakening of confidence in American support. America has always been there for Europe, and we did this because we intervened twice militarily in Europe in the last century when Europe couldn't handle itself, and we did it again over Bosnia, don't forget. And one of the reasons we presumably stay engaged in Europe and favor the European Union is so this kind of thing doesn't keep happening. So I think a question of confidence is very, very real. Russia is now getting stronger. It's a regional power, but it's spending a lot on its military. It does have ambitions for influence in parts of European Union, former Soviet bloc countries. Now, Poland hates Moscow, but countries like Slovakia and Hungary are listening to the siren song. And if people feel in France and Germany and Britain and other countries that America's not there helping them push this back, that does create real fissures in an alliance.
Hungary, with its own strong man ruler now, its own autocracy. Steve Erlanger, please stand by. It's great to have you with us from London. I want to welcome Julie Smith and James Carafano. Julie Smith joins us from Washington, a senior fellow, director of the Strategy and Statecraft Program at the Center for New American Security. Also, former Deputy National Security Advisor to Vice President Joe Biden, helped craft Europe and NATO policy for the Secretary of Defense during the Obama administration. Julie Smith, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
And with us from his office in Washington is James Carafano. He's vice president for the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, worked on President Trump's transition team focused on the State Department and Homeland Security between the Republican National Convention and inauguration. James Carafano, welcome back to you.
Good to be with you.
Julie Smith, you have said that there is some kind of total panic among allies. Like what and why?
Well, there is a lot of anxiety among our allies, and not just the allies in Europe, but as you noted, allies in other corners of the world. And there are a number of concerns. The first concern is on substance. You know, what actually will the president do vis-a-vis some of our longstanding alliances and these bilateral relationships? Europeans are very interested, as Steve noted, in what's going to happen with the United States and Russia. Will there be some sort of grand bargain cut over the heads of our European allies, all sorts of questions about the actual policies of this administration. But there are also questions about process, about how this administration is functioning on a day-to-day basis. There is confusion right now about the competing centers of power that one finds in the White House. They have noted, many of our allies, that Steve Bannon has been given a seat in the principal committee's meetings, meetings that look at some of the most complex and challenging national security challenges facing the United States. They've also noted that some of them have been asked to work with Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who has very little depth of knowledge in national security. They've been referred to engage with him instead of the national security advisor, Mike Flynn. So they're not exactly sure how the National Security Council is going to function. They are worried that they still don't have senior directors in many cases, and they are concerned about how they are going to be engaging with this administration and where the best points of contact are for them to raise some of these concerns and work on some of these policy questions that we've been talking about today.
James Carafano, has something fundamental changed that makes these old and close American allies somehow less important now?
No. I just disagree with pretty much everything I've heard for the last half hour. And I guess it's because I have a very, very different perspective. And it's not a partisan perspective. I work in a nonpartisan foundation. Even my work on the transition team was nonpartisan. The transition team's nonpartisan. So one, from the perspective of actually having worked with these folks, many of them which are in the government now over the last 4 months and working on the policy, I can't talk about the work of the transition team per se. I can generally kind of discuss its tenor. And the other thing is one of the things that we do at the Heritage Foundation is we spend a lot of time engaging with the international community, including the ambassadors here in Washington, D.C., and to a wide swath of international folks that kind of come through, particularly in the last several weeks, parliamentarians, members of ministers, and everything else. And I've actually watched this this process evolved really since the convention, when people actually started to consider, well, what would a President Trump foreign policy look like till now. And I can understand those comments from people who are just kind of watching kind of the global information environment and the external comments and everything. But, you know, I can say from talking to ambassadors and DCMs and political reps and other people coming through, it's increasingly, as they're learning more about the administration, they recognize that there is a lot more continuity than change there. I mean, the way I would describe it is if you think of government as an iceberg, and you know, you can focus on the tip of the iceberg like the Titanic, and that didn't work out very well, or you could focus on everything beneath the waves. As people look at not just what Mr. Trump talks in private, but what his other people are saying, it's very clear that they understand that there's a lot a lot more continuity than you might get from just observing kind of the external debate and discussion.
So you're saying there's no big change underway?
Not on NATO. You know, the way I explain it is, you know, when President Trump says America first, what he means is the job of the President of the United States, and I believe this. I mean, I've talked to him. I believe this is really what's in his heart, that the job of the President of the United States is to defend the vital interests of the United States. And, for example, one of the vital interests of the United States is the peace and security of Western Europe. That is as vitally important to us as defending the homeland itself.
Is the EU important to that?
Yeah, and one of the things you can't have a peaceful and stable Europe without a strong NATO. The president recognized that. Matter of fact, the president's actually said that in public, and he's actually said it in private. We all tend to kind of focus on the rhetoric that's sensationalist, and we ignore the comments. And the other thing I would say, which I think is really important, is people somehow talk about General Mattis and General Kelly is somehow a check and balance on the team in the White House. And I think that's just completely wrong. I mean, General Mattis and General Kelly would have never been hired if President Trump didn't have enormous, and I know that, and had enormous confidence. As a matter of fact, at General Kelly's, who's the head of the Secretary of Homeland Security, at his swearing-in ceremony, President Trump said, "Do you know why I hired General Kelly?" He says, "I didn't know who the best person would be for the Department of Homeland Security, so I called General Mattis and I said, who should I get? And he said, Kelly's the best guy for the job. So that's why I hired Kelly." So this is a team. They're not a check and balance in their president. I believe they believe in the president. And more importantly, the president believes in them. He trusts their advice and he hired them so he would listen to their advice. So this notion that somehow there's a bunch of people running around the White House and then we've got, you know, Kelly and keeping these guys in restraint, I think that's a very wrong way to look at how foreign policy in the United States is evolving.
Well, Steve Berlinger, what do you make of that characterization that there's more continuity than change here and this is kind of tempest in a teapot, no problem here? I mean, in a way, move along. Things are rolling.
Well, two things I'd say. One is the problem wasn't the tip of the iceberg. It was the iceberg itself. And two, I would say that I would hope this is correct. I'm simply reflecting, and I'm not just reading the press. I'm talking to people, talking to government leaders as well, and not just their ambassadors in the United States who are passing through. And they are very, very shaken. They would be very relieved to hear what James just said. And I hope that's correct. It is Trump himself who has said NATO was obsolete. It wasn't rhetoric that was pulled out of the air. And then he's since said that he loves NATO. So, you know, it leaves leaders to wonder which Trump they're talking to. Maybe one Trump is checking the other Trump. But the fact that there is anxiety is without question. Tusk wasn't making up his concerns, and if people can be reassured, I'm sure they would be very happy to be so.
Julie Smith, do you see sensationalist rhetoric as the only change here, or do you see something deeper going on in realigning the U.S. and its allies?
Well, let me first state that I, too, am meeting with ambassadors. I've talked to ministers. I've seen countless foreign guests since the election during the transition. This isn't a straw poll of one. Mm. And what we hear from allies at all levels, including the highest levels, is that they are confused by the very reassuring rhetoric that they hear on the one hand from the president's cabinet members, most notably Mattis and probably soon to be Tillerson as he settles into mm-hmm. his seat, and the tweets and the statements coming out of the White House. And it is creating anxiety. There is just no question about it. When Mattis traveled to Asia and laid hands on our allies there and tried to reassure allies that this administration respected alliances, placed value on alliances, a number of those allies felt good for about 10 minutes. And then they look again at the statements coming out of the White House, the tweets, and they're wondering who's right here? Who's going to prevail? Will we simply be in an environment where we have to just ignore what we're hearing from the White House? And the White House, in fact, in some ways becomes less relevant. And our main interlocutor will be the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense that will carry the day. But that is the confusion that our allies are facing. And on top of it, they're disheartened when they hear the president say that he respects President Putin, an autocrat who is rolling back the freedom of the press, aggressively pursuing the opposition in his own country, destroying civil society, undermining Western institutions that we've worked with our allies for 70 years to build up, they're clearly disheartened and troubled by statements like that. And they're wondering whether or not that's just the president with an off-the-cuff provocative remark in an interview, or whether or not it's policy. And that remains to be seen. And that's the fundamental question our allies and partners are asking around the world.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Rocket Mortgage provides a transparent online process that helps you understand all the details of your home loan. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the right mortgage solution for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about American alliances in this hour and how they stand up in the age of President Donald Trump. We've heard some pretty rough conversations reported from around the world, a new kind of message out of Washington, America first, right, front, and center. How do you see that playing out globally with American allies when the president says, don't worry about it? Are you reassured? Do you agree with the president that everybody has taken advantage, or many countries, of the United States for a long time? What about American advantages in having had so many allies around the world? And what about the role of Russia and Vladimir Putin? The president continuing to talk about him with Bill O'Reilly yesterday. Cautions here from some Republicans saying, hey, Mr. President, let's tread carefully with leaders of allies. Here was Republican Congressman Charlie Dent talking with the political website The Hill.
I believe that, you know, the president has to be careful with those kinds of conversations with our friends. I always say, you know, this is a time to double down on your friendships and your alliances, especially now, given the threats to the world order.
After that reportedly pretty tough conversation with the Prime Minister of Australia, John McCain jumped right in there himself. Here he was.
This, in my view, was an unnecessary and frankly harmful open dispute over an issue which is not nearly important as United States-Australian cooperation and working together, including training of our Marines in Australia and other areas of military cooperation and intelligence.
Tread carefully again. We're talking with CNN's Jake Tapper. We had Michael Hayden, former head of the CIA, National Security Agency, talking about getting into a dangerous place here last week.
The president has made an awful lot about being unpredictable, being a strategic advantage. But this seems to be drifting into a position where our friends think we're unreliable. And that's a dangerous space.
And abroad, you've got pushback as well. In debate last week about President Trump's executive order on immigration and travel in the House of Commons in Britain, Member of Parliament Ian Blackford of the Scottish National Party said the UK needs to stand up to President Trump.
The world is in an increasingly dangerous place, and if the special relationship is to mean anything, surely as friends of America, we should be deploring in the strongest possible terms and saying to President Trump that he must desist. It's not about the anxiety that we read about in the Foreign Secretary's statement. It's about the leadership that we must show in order to deliver peace and security in the world.
Steve Erlanger is with us this hour, London Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Julie Smith is here. She's at the Center for New American Security, former National Security Advisor to Vice President Joe Biden. James Carafano is with us. He worked on President Trump's transition team during the transition period. He is at the Heritage Foundation. James Carafano, you said nonpartisan, but of course, I mean, you got James DeMint, who's at the head of that. You worked on the transition team. That's not exactly a nonpartisan role, right?
No, it actually is a nonpartisan. I mean, you have to go back to what the definition of nonpartisan is.
That I guess so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't affiliate with a particular political party. Heritage is a 501c3 organization, so by law, if we affiliated with a political party, we'd be breaking the law. So we are, by definition, nonpartisan.
We know who James DeMint is, but working with the Trump transition team, that's pretty much right in the thick of politics. I would have to say,
Look, we can we can read the law, or we can just argue opinions. I mean, the law.
I don't think that's
law,
an opinion. A transition team is for a Republican president coming in,
and the transition team is a 501c4. So I mean, the comment on its face is really unfair. I mean, the transition team is not a political entity. It is a 501c4 that is set up under a law by the U.S. government.
It just seems a funny thing to argue, but okay. Let me ask you then. You're saying,
why are you picking a why are you trying to make it sound partisan if you can just read the law and see that it's not? I mean, it really puts me in a very unfair advantage that I have to sit here and defend that I'm a nonpartisan person when all I'm doing is complying with the law.
It's
patently unfair.
It's great on the law. It's just if people, Americans, are listening and saying you worked on Mr. Trump, President Trump's transition team, that does have a political factor to it, in the same way that Julie Smith working for Vice President Biden did.
Well, if Hillary Clinton had called me and asked me to work on her presidential transition team, I would have happily done so.
And that would have had a different complexion. Let me ask you.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't have had a different complexion in the sense that would have asked me to provide policy advice, which I would have done.
I imagine it would have. But let me ask you, are you saying then, when you say this is all overdrawn or overblown, that we're looking at a status quo foreign policy from the Trump, status quo ante from the Trump administration?
No, I mean, I think there are a couple areas where they're clearly going to go in a different direction. I think Iran is one. I mean, I don't think the president's going to walk away from the Iran deal. He's already been very clear on that. But I think this administration is more skeptical that the Iran deal is going to constrain Iran as a disruptive influence in the region. And I would expect that in a sense, they would go back to a policy that looks more vigorously kind of limit Iran's influence in the region. So that's one area where I think there'll be a fair distinction. There'll also be other areas of continuity. I actually think North Korea policy will actually be on the track where we've gone to heavily sanctioning them, kind of re-energizing the military alliances with South Korea and Japan, putting more emphasis on missile defense. I'd expect that to continue.
Julie, I'm trying to suss out here how big a change Americans should understand is underway right now. And James Carafano says not as much as is being advertised. On the other hand, we're hearing a very different tone, to say the least, out of the White House. How would you characterize, for American citizens listening and trying to assess what's going on with this country's place in the world, what's transpiring right now when it comes to our alliances and our relationship with old allies?
Well, first of all, let's step back for a minute and remember this is week 3, right? So it feels like a lot has happened. No, I agree with that. But I can't say definitively, how everything is going to radically shift from a policy perspective. But I will say that what's different about this administration is its willingness to challenge the longstanding relationships that we've had with allies around the world. Russia and China wake up every day and wish that they had a network of partners and allies around the world like the United States does. And what Trump seems to be willing to do is to challenge the system, and challenging it to be better, to reform it, to be stronger, to get our European allies to invest in their defense budgets. Mm-hmm. All of that is a good thing and is something many, many presidents on both sides of the aisle have pursued over the years. What's not okay is when you turn those relationships upside down, you call into question the security commitments that we've made, and you create this unease and anxiety among allies wondering about whether or not we're going to fundamentally be reliable. And at the same time while you're doing that, you express open admiration for the likes of President Putin. That's different. Every president that we've had in the United States, left, right, center, whoever, has always fundamentally, for example, put faith in the transatlantic relationship and the institutions that we've helped build. Now we have a president that's not so sure. Some days he says he loves it. Some days he says NATO's obsolete. He clearly doesn't like the European Union and is aligned, I think, with Nigel Farage on his anti-EU positions. And so we're going to have to see where we end up here. But what it's doing is it's basically putting everything on the table, open to negotiation, an America first policy that's making many of our partners and allies wondering again, as you noted at the open, if it's America alone.
Let's go to our listeners around the country. Surrey, Maine. Elaine, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yes, you know, I'm tired of listening to this show and others and hearing people from the administration try to walk back the things that this unstable person in the White House is saying, which I think he's saying exactly what he means, and everyone is in the administration is trying to soothe the public by saying, no, 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 he really means this.
Elaine, to be specifically fair, we have no one from the administration here. James Carfano worked on the transition team, but okay, so what are you worried about?
Everything. We are terrified of this unstable person who is an admirer of Putin and who destroys our relationships with our allies like Australia, with these offhand remarks. And
President Trump says, don't worry about it. It's not destroyed. Don't worry about it. It's just renegotiating parts of the relationship.
I am not that, you know, that doesn't make me feel any better. People don't know what to expect from this person, and relationships are going to break down because of that. No.
Elaine, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Chrissy in Holiday, Florida. Chrissy, you're on the air.
Hello. I waited a while to talk with you, so I'm glad I'm on. I've been watching Trump, you know, long before when he was on Celebrity Apprentice. I don't look at him as a figure of somebody that's more in control of, you know, as I look at his past, his country, for him to run our country is beyond my thoughts of.
Yeah, but he's president. What do you think on foreign policy, Chrissy?
Foreign policy, he's not doing very well because he seems to be making more enemies and getting rid of our allies. He's alienating the allies that are in the countries to help us. And it seems like everything Obama did is getting knocked out as quick as it took him forever to get everything in place to keep peace. But yet he's signing papers and bills to just dismantle America.
Well, we're three weeks in, but I take your point. We hear how you see it. And let me get one more. Tampa, Brian, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, my view on our allies is like in our relations with Russia is Russia is like they've helped us in World War One, World War Two, and they've been a friend of the U.S. even when they were the Soviet Union. You know?
Oh, come on, and, man! We were at nuclear sword tips with them for decades.
While they were the Soviet Union, they helped us in World War One and Two, and the allies that we're reconsidering is like Saudi Arabia, and places like that, people don't understand. They kill homosexuals, and that's who you call one of your tightest allies.
So you're comfortable, you're happy getting closer to Russia.
What's that?
You're happy getting closer to Russia, this country.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still fighting on these other countries. We're still fighting the Taliban. We're still fighting. We're on pause on North Korea.
Yeah, Brian, I appreciate your call. Steve Erlanger, I'm reading here in Der Spiegel, and they had that very rough cover out there with the Donald Trump holding the head of the Statue of Liberty. Boy, that was rugged. But they're saying that Europeans are now looking at how to stand up to what they say is this challenge of the change in foreign policy out of the Trump administration. And they say there's sort of three ways here. Is it better to remain composed and unperturbed and rely on rationality, on the strength of decades of ties, on the rules of the global economy, sort of trust that things will go along, or to prepare countermeasures, which is interesting. I'm not even sure what that means, or even to take advantage of a vacuum that's being created. You talk with leaders, Steve. Are they sitting tight? We're only 3 weeks in, as Julie says. Or are they beginning already to go in different directions from the pre-Trump times?
Well, there isn't a lot of unity, and there is a degree of hysteria. I think James is absolutely right about this. And the cover of Spiegel seemed to me really over the top. It was pretty upsetting and a little unfair at the start. And I think the Europeans are not very good at getting their act together at any time. So my hope is that they will listen to Angela Merkel, who's a very calm, pragmatic sort of person, who's made her points to President Trump about the importance of Western values and trade, who has bit back when, a Trump official hit Germany for its trade surplus. There are a lot of Europeans who hit Germany for that, too. But I just think it's too early to get hysterical. I mean, what there is anxiety. But anxiety doesn't become action, and there's no reason for it to take, you know, big action now. Nothing terrible has happened.
James Carafano, look 4 years out for us. There's continuity here, you say, but presumably also changes. If the Trump changes go through, how would the world and America's relations with its allies look different in 4 years, James?
Well, I don't think we have to wait 4 years. We have some benchmarks that are coming pretty quickly over the next couple of months, which I think will say who's right and who's wrong here. And one is there's a thing called the Munich Security Conference, in which the Munich Security Conference, which the Vice President, Secretary Kelly, and Secretary Mattis are all speaking at, which will be important. President's already committed to what's called the Mini NATO Summit, which I believe now is going to be in May. That'll be an important marker. And then you also have G7s and G20s, which it's not just what you say in the G7s and G20s, but what you do on the sidelines of that. So we'll have a lot of data points in the next 6 months to tell us, are we rewriting all the alliances, which I think is simply not true. I think that if there's a continuity in American foreign policy in the next 4 years, it's going to be the traditional allies that we have now, South Korea, Japan, Australia, in the Pacific, growing allies like India, in Europe, the NATO allies. Those will be the allies we have 4 years from now. And I would conversely say that the people that we're concerned about now, the Russians, who I think 4 years from now will be concerned about the Russians, because Putin is not a partner for the United States. I think we'll be concerned about the Chinese, the Iranians, and North Koreans. So the world might look eerily familiar. And we may be doing better or worse in dealing with those challenges, but I think the challenges will look the same.
Julie Smith, we're 3 weeks in. Look on out. What's your concern here?
My concern is, I guess, first and foremost, where we're going with Russia. And it's really unclear right now. I think the one consistent message, though, that we heard during the campaign and the transition was that this administration is interested in cozying up with the Russians in the name of combating ISIL. But I just note to the caller from Tampa that Russia is not a country, at least so far, it has not shown itself to be a country that is interested in going after ISIS. 85%, 90% of the strikes that it's carried out have actually been against the non-extremist opposition forces in Syria. Their main goal is to keep Assad in power, and they have been very successful at doing that.
We've got to start at digging in to where American foreign policy is headed under a new, as you say, just 3 weeks in administration of Donald Trump. I want to thank all three of you for helping us do that. Julie Smith at the Center for a New American Security, former advisor to Vice President Joe Biden on national security. Thank you very much for being with us today, Julie.
Thank you.
James Carafano, he was on the transition team, the Trump transition team, now at the Heritage Foundation. James Carafano, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Steve Erlanger, London Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Our thanks to you as always, Steve, for being here. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.